Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Tanya Manley. Tanya Manley is a 50-year-old mother of four boys, two in heaven and two on earth. Tanya has been happily married to her husband, Will, for 16 years. She started Sunset Stories podcast to get the conversation going about child loss, to find and build a community of resources, and to tell the stories of our children and loved ones so they may serve as hope and light in the darkness of child loss. She aspires to be the person she needed to be when she lost her son Easton at birth in 2014 and her 30-year-old son CJ from a head injury after a motorcycle accident in 2021 that took his life. In addition to Sunset Stories podcast, Tanya administers a Facebook group for bereaved mothers called Grieving Mamas. They are almost 8,000 members strong, and it is a safe place to be seen, heard, and supported. Tanya is also a grief coach and business owner, and she wants anyone grieving to know that they are not alone and that we can heal together. And with that, Tanya, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It is my absolute pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you, Dave. It is my honor to be here. I'm so excited to talk with you today. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You're welcome. And my first question for you is, when do you sleep?
Not very much.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I didn't think so. With the schedule you keep, being a business owner and what you're doing to create a sanctuary for grieving mothers to share their stories, it's got to take a plus your family, you know, with your children and with Will. It sounds like you have a pretty full plate most days.
I do. But it's what I love to do. I love helping people. I love helping people share their stories. And it's fun to stay busy. It keeps you young. Like you said, I'm 50, so I don't feel it, you know, with my personality and that type of thing, but my body feels it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be 70 next year. And
wow.
And I don't feel like I've lived 70 years, but I know I've lived 70 years, but I think the key is our ability to stay engaged, to stay relevant, to try to make a difference in people's lives and to take care of what's important for us. I think the more engaged that we can stay, the better quality of life that we're going to lead.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
I have so many questions for you just about everything you've been through, but the first question I usually ask all my listeners this is, tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions.
Well, in a nutshell, I think I feel like I was kind of born into grief. And I say that because, or maybe born into harder times. I was, you know, my mother was a teenage mother. My dad was an alcoholic. Not a present father. We didn't have a lot, you know, growing up, but we didn't really know that. Obviously, you know, going through those things of not having a present father as a young girl and, you know, growing up with a teenage mother and, in the country of Texas, East Texas, you know, getting pregnant when I was 16 years old with my first son. Just all of the things that generational trauma and teen pregnancy and all of that brings to you, all the decisions that I made because of things that, you know, how I grew up or the things that I went through in life. I just, you know, I'm not ashamed of any of it. It's made me who I am today. I'm a very strong person. I can handle and get through a lot of things. I've overcome many, many things that were meant to probably destroy me. And I just feel like sharing my story, hopefully someone else out there went through the same things and could take a look at me and say, you know, I'm just a little girl from East Texas, you know, that had a baby at 16 and worked really, really hard to overcome a lot of things in my life. Made some bad choices. Yes. Am a good person. Absolutely. Learn from them. You betcha.
Yeah. And the choices we make don't dictate our worth as a person. I think, you know, we make choices in the present moment and we look at the situation and think, this is the road that we're going to take. But sometimes a lot of things happen that are out of our control that just, in hindsight, make that decision not as good as we thought it was going to be. But it doesn't make us a bad person for making it. It doesn't make us less than for making it. It just meant that it was a decision that didn't turn out the way we expected it to be. But as you said, we can learn from that. Every experience that you've had in your past, that I've had in my past, have dictated what I'm doing in the present. And
absolutely.
Good and bad, it's all connected. It's all connected to what we're doing now and what we're doing to try to make a difference in the lives of others.
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes I think, you know, what if I would have grown up, you know, with two parents in my home and, you know, money and food on the table and, you know, all of these things. But that wasn't my journey. You know, that wasn't what was meant for me. And I choose to be a survivor of all the things that I've went through and hopefully, you know, speaking on them, you know, and not having the embarrassment or the not caring about the judgment, knowing about who I am today. I'm not even the same person I was last year as I am, you know, today. So like I said, don't ever be afraid of your story because it's your story and it's yours. It's mine to tell, you know, no better person to tell it than me.
Absolutely. And every story that I am blessed to be witness to inspires me and it keeps me going. And it also it keeps me motivated to continue to grow in grief. And the worst thing that can happen to an individual is they have an untold story that nobody's willing to listen to. Our stories make us who we are, and our stories are an important part of our lives. And that narrative is continued to be revised as we continue to grow, whether we're going through grief or growing through any other particular type of challenge that we've experienced. That story is never ending and it's continued to be scripted right up until we die.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And, you know, if you would have ever told me that 3 years ago when I lost my son, CJ, that I would be, you know, having a podcast and being a grief coach, doing all the things that you had mentioned, I would have said no way because I really didn't see any light out of that darkness. You know, I've said this before and I'm very transparent that losing him nearly took me out. Mm-hmm. It really almost did. And it has been the hardest thing that I've had to heal myself from. And I've had to heal myself from a lot of really difficult things as a young child, as a young girl, how to figure out how to do that. This one was one that I really didn't know even where to start. You know, like you said, I lost a son at birth 10 years ago when he was born. And that's a whole different type of grief. There's a lot of what ifs. What would he look like? How would he be? Would he look like my husband? Would he act like me? But with CJ, you know, I had him a week before my 17th birthday. And he was my first love. And that little boy saved me. And I loved him more than anything and still do. So learning how to live without being his mom and him being on this earth and losing him at such a young age, 30 years old, and so tragically, changed me to my very core. And it's why I do what I do today.
Yeah, and if you had asked me told me 21 years ago, over 21 years ago, that I'd be doing a podcast, that I'd be doing bereavement support, that I'd be teaching death, dying, and bereavement at a university, I would have looked at you like you had two heads. But
right.
Then my daughter, Janine, became sick. She was a teenage mother as well. She became sick with cancer. She was diagnosed 3 weeks after her daughter was born, and she transitioned to a new existence 10 months after giving birth to her first child. So, but I'm doing what I'm doing now. It wasn't the life I ever envisioned, but it's the life now that I've embraced, and it's the life that I have accepted to live in spite of the circumstances with my daughter's physical absence. But I know that she is always with me in one way, shape, or form. She guides the work that I do. She's a partner in the work that I do. And I would guess that CJ and Easton are both partners in the work that you do.
Yeah, they really are the sole reason. I mean, I've had a lot of loss, and I've had a lot of loss in the past, 10 years, obviously starting with Easton. Then I lost my best friend in 2020, my sister in 2020, CJ obviously in 2021, and then my dad recently in 2023. And I really am, like you said, I have embraced this. This is, I remember sitting there asking God, what do I do with this pain? I've got to figure this out somehow. And it was very clear. He said, heal and go back for the others that are going to come after you, because there are. Every day when I click on Grieving Mamas and those requests, I have to read those. Every day, someone becomes a bereaved parent. And so it's my boys that guide me to do this, because our stories, like you said, are so very important. And I remember in the beginning of my grief, feeling very alone, feeling very judged, feeling very rushed to heal by society. Mm-hmm. And when I went looking for community, there was very little. And there still is very little. I know that as bereaved parents, we are living everyone's worst nightmare. We get it. It's not something people want to talk about, but it is something that we need to talk about for two reasons, because it is going to happen to other people. It did happen to us, and we never thought it would. And also to educate the public, on how to treat us, how to support us. And, those are the goals for Sunset Stories podcast is, and to help others, when we talk about our children and it's recorded in our narrative, in our memory, or our loved ones, not just our children, but our loved ones as well. It's recorded in our memory. CJ left behind a daughter so that she will know, she will hear the stories of him and her children and her children's children. It may seem hard thinking about talking about it and telling these stories, and it is at times, but it's for a purpose for those that are going to come after us.
Absolutely. And those stories will live on long after we pass on. So, and that's
exactly.
And that's the importance, that those legacies continue and the stories continue after we're no longer around to tell them. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about CJ. You said he saved you, pretty much. How did he do that specifically? And would you tell our listeners just a little bit more about what you remember about him that you'd like to share about him?
Yeah, he absolutely did save me. Like I said, I had CJ a week before my 17th birthday. And growing up without a present father, with a mother who was, just trying to work all the time and make it, make ends meet, and a young mother, I didn't have a lot of guidance. I didn't see what unconditional love looked like. And so when I had him, I wasn't scared. I knew that I was going to love this little boy and give him the best life possible. And he was never going to have to wonder, if mom was going to be there, because I was going to be there for every step of the way. And we basically, grew up together. I mean, obviously I was still mom and, the rules were my rules, but we taught each other. He taught me a lot of things. He taught me unconditional love. He taught me, what being a boy mom actually means. You always, you know, hear moms talk about it, but there's just something about a mother and her son that really, there's really no words for that type of love and bond. CJ had a heart bigger than Texas. He loved to make people laugh. He was tall and handsome and had the gift of gab and lived life, you know, on his terms. He was very adventurous, kind of did things, asked for forgiveness rather than permission. He was a little bit of a rebel and a country boy, but would give the shirt off his back. As a matter of fact, when he passed away, he had a homeless guy living with him because it was November and it was cold. I got messages all the time about things that he did for people that I didn't even know about. So he had my giving heart and loving nature. He was super protective over his family. He loved his daughter fiercely. He was a hard worker. But, you know, CJ did battle with mental illness, and I talk about that because it's so important. He was diagnosed with bipolar disorder when he was a young adult. And when I look back at a lot of our conversations, it was just, you know, me saying, hey, you can live a good life and have mental illness. You've just got to, you know, if you need medicine, you need medicine, counseling, whatever the case may be. But as a young man in the South, that is very frowned upon to say, I have a mental illness. So at times he thought that it might defy him. And so he didn't address it head on like I wished he would have. And, you know, CJ died from a brain injury after a motorcycle accident. And a lot of people want to blame, you know, the hospital for letting him out too soon, the guy for selling him a motorcycle without a helmet. But if I'm being honest, CJ was going through a divorce in a mania period at that time and thought he could get on a motorcycle and ride it with no helmet, no proper gear on a rainy day. And that decision cost him his life. You know, if we're being realistic about it, because initially, of course, we want to blame everybody else. But my son made a decision that day that cost him his life. And I believe that he was headed back in that direction and getting his mental health in order. But he was 30, you know, and I could say all day long, take your medicine, go to the doctor, you know, that type of thing. But he really battled with it, with the image of mental health in, like you said, you've seen photos of it. He's very handsome, very charismatic. And he didn't want that to define him. And I think that had we had more conversations about mental health, that he wouldn't have felt that way, you know?
I was an addictions counselor and clinical supervisor for a state-run addiction treatment agency. And there was always that stigma about asking for help, you know, as if mental health was this thing to be feared or mental illness was this thing to be feared or be ashamed of. But in reality, mental illness is going to, it's not going to discriminate. It's going to, depending on family history, other circumstances, it's going to find us. And one of the things that I've understood with individuals that have had mood swings or mood disorder is any type of stress can activate that very easily. Unmanaged stress for an individual, let's say, who's diagnosed with bipolar disorder or any other, I can think of another illness, schizophrenia is another one that individuals are susceptible to stress or sudden changes in their lives. If that stress isn't managed, their symptoms can become very prominent again, and they're not making great decisions. And it doesn't mean that these are bad individuals or people that are less than. It just meant that they made a bad decision. These are good people who made a bad decision because of stuff that was going on inside of their brain. And it sounds like, you know, that was what was going on with CJ. The other thing is I like outliers. I always like my daughter was kind of a little bit of a rebel. You know, she would tell you what was on her mind. She would be honest. You might not like to hear the truth, but it was the truth. And she would do it in a way that was respectful. But the outliers, the rebels, these are the rule breakers. And these are the creatives. These are the individuals that cause us to look at things a little bit differently. And they tell us conventional wisdom is highly overrated. And sometimes you just got to take the book and not go by the book, but just throw the book right out the window because the book doesn't apply. And
that's the way he lived.
And I'll tell you something. I hope right now, because of this conversation or because of we've met, that CJ and Janine have somehow found each other in the afterlife and are looking down upon both of us and smiling.
Cheering us on. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad that you said that too, because, and I even to the point where, and I'm a 50-year-old woman, I remember when I was going through the grief and my mental health, I did not know what was going on, you know, with what grief does to the brain and the body. I had 100 seizures the year after CJ died. Mm. I'd never had a seizure in my life. My body did not know how to handle the grief that I was going through. And I remember saying to my husband, I was scared. I was like, is he going to put me in a mental institution or, you know, what is he going to think? Because I've always been superwoman, handling everything and, you know, juggling everything. And at that point, I couldn't be everything to everyone anymore. It's why I sold my business. It's why I moved back home. I just craved for a peacer, less stressful life because my brain, I felt like I was going crazy. And I remember saying to my husband, you need to know that I'm not okay. And he kind of looked at me and he's like, what do you mean? And I said, I'm just not okay. You know, I'm trying to figure all of this out. And what grief does to the brain, we really don't talk about, you know. And I really thought I was losing my mind. But I spoke up and I said, I need some help here. You know, this is not me. And I hope that anybody's listening to this will do the same. You know, find someone that you trust that will be without judgment and ask for help. Because once I did and I started, you know, healing, I'm very, very thankful for the growth that grief has given me today.
Yeah. And I've said this on numerous podcasts, is we don't have any control over the challenges that are going to befall us in this lifetime, but it's how we transcend those challenges that are going to determine the quality of our lives. If I had a choice, Tanya, would I have wanted to, you know, go through a serious transformation in my life because of the death of a child? Absolutely not. I would have tried to handpick some other challenge to facilitate that transformation. But the bottom line, this was the challenge that was meant to befell me in this lifetime. We can, you know, we can either allow it to victimize us, and I'm paraphrasing what you had said, or we can work. We can arise above it. And I chose to arise above it after giving myself a sufficient period of time to let me feel what I had to feel.
I think that's a great point too for me, because it was also for me because I went back to work about a month later, and I don't recommend that. At about month 7, when I finally got his autopsy and found out what really happened, and CJ died in his sleep of a brain aneurysm. And, you know, I talked to him the night before. I'm going to come check on you on Friday. Of course, he'd been left, you know, the hospital said he had a slight brain bleed, follow up with a, you know, neurologist, all the things. So we believe the doctors and you know, we're thinking everything's going to be okay. And the next morning, you know, I get a phone call that his roommate found him. He passed away in his sleep. And we just really didn't know what happened during COVID. It took 7 months to get the autopsy. When I saw the autopsy and I saw it on paper is when I had a breakdown. I didn't have a breakdown initially. I had a breakdown 7 months later, but I really believe that I just should have taken the time initially. But again, I was a business owner, had 50 employees, had a lot of responsibility, have a young child at home. And society tells you take a couple of weeks and go back to work. And for a bereaved parent, I just don't think that that's really, some people have to go back to work, you know. Mm-hmm. I wished I would have given myself more time and more grace had I done that, that first year probably would have been less traumatic for me. But I really didn't start my healing until, you know, that month seven, when my brain just said, we can't do this anymore. We've got to shut some things down.
Yeah. And I think there's a part of us that wants to try to have some type of normalization in our lives by working, by doing some routine stuff, just so we can, you know, put some structure in our lives. And in some ways just give us a break from the intense grief that we feel, particularly in the early phases. But like you said, a lot of times the compartmentalization prevents us from really feeling what we need to feel. And, you know, somebody said to me, and this was a great analogy, think of a dog that's been bitten, and they try to run in a circle and outrun the pain and outrun the pain, and eventually they just collapse from it because the pain just overcomes them. So essentially it's like you can run from the pain, but you can't hide from the pain. So you might as well try to deal with the pain, learn something from it, and work through that so that you can take the next step in your progression towards reengaging in life again.
Well, yeah, and I agree. And I also think that your grief is yours and yours alone. Mm-hmm. And you have to walk it yourself. And I never put myself first. I've been a mom for 30 years. I never put myself first. And so obviously went back to work, you know, with all the pressure of the employees and needing, you know, all the things. And once I put myself first and said, I can offer nothing but my broken self right now. I can't do any of this anymore. That's when the healing really started to begin, when I was able to sit with myself and my grief and work through it and just say, I can't help you guys right now. I got to help myself. And I know as mothers, that's really hard for us to do. But it was absolutely necessary for me to get through that.
Yeah, one of the things that I got from your story is that I sense that your faith was very crucial in helping you navigate grief, and still is. What would you say to somebody who questions their faith after catastrophic loss?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I talk with parents every day about that. And I think that, I'll be honest, when we lost Easton, I'd remarried late in life and he had never had any children. So we tried IVF and spent all this money and finally got pregnant. And, you know, the day before he was born, he comes and he's born sleeping, is what we say. I was furious at God, furious. And I remember looking at my husband saying, why aren't you mad? And he said, you know, we can't question God's plan. And I said, well, I do. I am. Because we would have been really good parents. And we really, you know, we really wanted this. And 20 days later, we got a call to adopt our son that we have now, Jalen, that's now going to be about to be 12 years old. But I wasn't as far along in my walk with God, you know, 10 years ago when I lost Easton. When I lost CJ, I held on to God for dear life. There was no way that I was going to get through it without my faith. And I spent a lot of time with him asking, what do I do? How do I do this? You know, be here with me. And I think it's understandable when people question their faith, when they lose their children. Why does, you know, a six-year-old get cancer? Why does a 13-year-old take their own life? You know, why, you know, innocent children and good people? And I think that's okay. And God understands it too. He understands it too. And he's going to be there when you're yelling and screaming and you're shaking your fists, and he's going to be there and walking with you the whole way. So I think that I can speak on it, that I was in two different places during the loss. But I will say that my faith in God is the only reason that I'm able to be here today sitting with you, talking with you. It's the only way for me.
Yeah, I think we have to have faith in something that's greater than ourselves to get through the challenges that we navigate. We have to convince ourselves that we're not alone. And you're right. The questions that we ask are the normal part of the grief process, the what ifs, the whys. I asked all of those questions, Donnie, after Janine transitioned. But then I realized after a certain point that the only answer I was going to be satisfied with is that God came down and said, look, we made a mistake. We're going to give you your life back the way it was. And then I realized about a year and a day after she transitioned that that wasn't going to happen, that this was going to be my life moving forward, that my daughter wasn't going to be a part of my life anymore. But once I stopped asking the questions and silenced my mind, I got the answers that I needed. The other thing that also helped, and I was going to a bereaved parent support group that was facilitated by a Catholic nun, and she allowed us to openly question our faith and question God. She created space for that. And I remember talking to her and telling her after that I was angry at God for taking Janine from me. And then she looked at me and she asked me a simple question. She said, what if God was just as upset as you were that he took your daughter? And I had to think about that. And then I began to realize that there were certain things that were happening that I couldn't make sense of at the time. As I look back on it now, I was getting signs from the universe that my daughter was around. So eventually I was able to come to the conclusion that maybe he was just as upset as me because he was letting me know that she's okay through the signs and that she's with me and that I'm going to take care of her. It gave me a different perspective. It took me a while to integrate that perspective into my being. But when she asked me that simple question, that just flipped the script right there. I had to think about that.
Yeah. They're called aha moments. And there was a couple of things that come to mind for me is that, CJ did struggle with his mental illness. And, God didn't put him on that motorcycle that day without a helmet on a rainy day in College Station. He made that choice. That choice is what cost his life. God didn't do that. The other thing is that, God promises us, eternal life in heaven, not here on earth. Mm-hmm. And my son suffered a lot. And of course, when I want him here, absolutely. But I know he's not suffering. And then the other thing that, as you said, takes some time. If anybody would have told me this in the beginning, they wouldn't have liked what I said. But what I try to focus on too that helps me a lot is the totality of his life, the 30 years that I got to be his mom, the memories that are just ours, that love transcends death. I still have a relationship with my son. I could still call his energy at any point in time. I talk to him. He sends me signs all the time. And I do know he's okay. I do. Do I miss him? Absolutely. Do I wish he was here? Yes. Do I still cry? Mm-hmm. But I know that I will see my son again. I know it. And I know he's here with us all the time.
And I think the yearnings that we have for the physical presence of our loved ones, no matter how long it's been, is a sign that our love never dies for the people that we've lost, and that relationships are enduring, they're ongoing, and they continue long after a person leaves this world.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I wanted to just touch on the loss of your sister for a minute, if we can. I'm also aware that sibling loss can be at sometimes disenfranchised and go unacknowledged because everybody's concerned about how the parents are doing. And
yes,
they really forget the nature of the relationship that the siblings shared, which is a relationship that's unique in and of itself. Did you find this to be the case with your own loss with your sister? Did you find at any time that your loss was unacknowledged, or did you feel as supported as your parents did?
Very much so. I always think about my children, Colton and Jalen. Colton obviously is only 2.5 years younger than CJ, grew up with CJ. So the loss for him was very significant. They had plans to raise their daughters together. They just very, very close. And so I often think about, it's not about making it about me. My son is hurting too. He lost his brother and my younger son too. So I always make sure that they know that it's okay to talk about, and let's talk about and tell stories and that type of thing. But when I lost my sister, Destiny, her and my dad had been in a car wreck a couple of weeks before. And, you know, the focus was on my dad because he was in his, you know, his early 80s. And so I remember, again, talking to her the day before, and she passed away in her sleep as well. And my dad found her. And I was thinking how horrible that would be for my dad, you know. But I noticed that I just had a cousin that lost a brother last year. And I remember her calling me and she's saying, "You don't understand what kind of pain this feels like." And I say, "Yeah, I do. You remember, I lost a brother 19 years ago and I lost a sister in 2020. And I think people forget. She didn't forget, but, you know, she was just like, this is a different type of pain, you know, all the memories, all the things. And I was glad that I was there, you know, able to be there for her when she lost her brother, and acknowledge it and check on her more often, because you're right. Sibling survivor loss is just something that it's kind of like, we're just worried about the parents. That sibling loss is really, really tough. When I look at it, there's four of us girls and we were a wild and crazy bunch. And now when we take sister trips, it just doesn't, it's not the same, but we try to do things to honor her. And, you know, we talk about her all the time. So I felt like nobody asked me about my sister very much or remembers or talks about her as much as we do as sisters. It's something that as society we need to change as well and have conversations about, because these losses are significant.
Absolutely. There hasn't been, to my knowledge, a lot of research done on sibling grief, and there needs to be more done. But the thing that I really impress upon my students is that the sibling bond is unique. It's very different from the parent-child bond. Siblings are confidants to each other. They will tell each other things that they'd never tell their parents.
And absolutely.
And when you lose that connection, that's a significant part of the relationship growing up. It's a person who empowered you to be autonomous. And now you have to find other ways to be autonomous and other individuals who are going to respect that, much like your sibling respected that. And it's difficult. You can't replace it. And it's really difficult to recreate that again. And I tell my students who are going to be working with children and families, you're going to be working with families who have experienced the death of a child. Don't forget the siblings. Make sure that they have a voice. Make sure that their grief is acknowledged. Their stories are acknowledged. Don't let them become disenfranchised victims of loss.
Yeah, I agree. And in building this grief community that I've essentially been doing for the past 3 years, there's a lady named Maya Rofer, and she has a Surviving Siblings podcast. It is strictly for surviving siblings. She lost her brother 8 years ago. And I always refer people to Maya that's lost a sibling, because that is strictly what she does, is talk about the impact of losing a sibling. But there definitely needs to be more conversation about it. I agree.
Absolutely. I've heard many good things about Maya's work as well, too. So, in, you know, from several individuals in addition to yourself. So one of my last questions for you today is, if you're going to leave our listeners with one thing, or you can leave us with more than one thing, if more than one thing comes to mind, what would that be?
Oh, I guess the biggest thing would be to give yourself a lot of grace and compassion, and don't try to rush yourself in grief. Understand that people can only meet you at the grief that they have experienced. So if they've never lost a child, they can't walk that with you. They can understand and empathize and sympathize, but until you've had that specific type of loss, you can't really identify with that pain. And we hope that they never do. Surround yourself with people that are grieving and on a healing journey. Those are going to become your people. You're going to find that. And, you know, just take it one day at a time. Sometimes 1 minute, 1 hour, one breath, one day at a time. But if it's amazing what time and work can do to you as you heal. If you would have ever told me that I would have ever been able to let joy and grief coexist, I would have said no. And those feelings are very valid in the beginning. But you will be happy again. You will smile again. You will get back to living life. You will always grieve your child, or, you know, it's just about how you do it. Find ways to honor them, what we call good grief. Go to their favorite restaurant, order their favorite meal, get them a, you know, get a cupcake and eat it on their birthday and talk to them. Whatever you need to do to heal on your journey, it's your journey and your journey alone. And whatever it looks like, there's no right or wrong way.
I think that's a great message. It's important that we feel empowered to handle our grief as we see fit. As long as what we're doing is not hurting ourselves or anybody else, it's all good. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to judging how somebody grieves, it's more important that we witness that and learn from that, because we can all learn from each other. We can take bits and pieces of each other's journey and incorporate that into our core belief systems without abandoning our core beliefs. We can just, and we can't do that if we're constantly judging the other person's validity of the way they grieve or and how they grieve. But if we can witness that and incorporate pieces that, geez, might work for us, it's going to make it a better community of support for individuals who are going through challenge. So,
yeah, I'm so thankful for my grief community and the mothers that are now, you know, my biggest, you know, cheerleaders, and the things that they've, you know, whether it's been in their book that they wrote or, you know, podcast or whatever, that they've, you know, given me little bits of information that's worked for them. And I've kind of weaved my own way. But I could not imagine going through this journey without my grief community. And like you said, we have a Facebook group that my friend Melissa Hatcher, who wrote a book and lost her son, started. It's almost 8,000 mamas strong. And it's just a place to come and feel supported. We talk about things that, you know, maybe you don't want to put on your personal Facebook because, mm-hmm. you know, people think you're grieving too long or, you know, whatever. It's a place to be seen and heard and supported. And there's lots of places like that. And then the podcast, you know, my podcast is it was a place for people to tell their stories of their loved ones, you know, freely, and to have that in their memory, you know, for forever. Mm-hmm. And so without that, the support of the grief community, I wouldn't have been able to heal the way that I'm healing now.
Yeah, and I think quality support for any life challenge that we go through is so key to getting through that, because as human beings, we were not meant to exist alone. We were meant to experience solitude that would help recharge us and give us clarity, but we were never meant to go through life without the support of other individuals who are willing to bear witness to our journey. So,
amen.
My last question for you today, Tanya, is if people want to get in touch with you, find out more about your services, what's the best way for them to do that?
So they can find me on Facebook, whether it's in Grieving Mamas or just Tanya Manley on Facebook. TikTok is Sunset Stories Podcast. They can find me there. They can email me at sunsetstoriespodcast@gmail.com. I think, you know, I'm not hard to find. I'm not hard to find. We have a lot of resources for grieving parents, whether it be free books that we can offer, whether it is a coaching, somebody that is coaching. We just have lots of different resources on grieving mamas, and we're kind of building our grief Rolodex, so to speak. And we're really launching that for the holidays coming up. These are some tough times for people that have lost someone. And so we will be doing lives every Tuesday night in grieving mamas on just, you know, tips to help us through these holidays. And so we have a lot of free resources for anybody that's grieving that needs it. So yes, please reach out, and we've got sponsors and we can help you in lots of different ways.
That sounds good. I think resources as far as information, education is so key, particularly in early grief. So I'm glad you have a space where you can provide that for grieving mothers. So Tanya, thank you so much for being a valuable guest contributor today on the Teaching Journeys podcast. I truly enjoyed our conversation. I hope we can do it again sometime.
Me too. Thank you so much. It was my honor.
You're welcome. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.